one. Okay, so this is the second part of the second week, and we're going to leave Scotland behind and look at somewhere else, not very far away, Wales. Or, in the Welsh language, Cymru. So let's see what we can do. Oh, Wales, Cymru. Next, please. Yeah, so here you have the map of Wales. It sticks off to the left-hand side of the of Great Britain. And you can see that the capital, here's the capital, Cardiff, right at the bottom, which had quite a lot of, I think it had quite a lot of industry. You also probably noticed that the green bits are elevations, so you have quite a lot of mountains. Yeah, quite a lot of mountains, and in the mountains there is no oil, but there is coal. Du charbon, beaucoup de charbon. And so the history of Wales in the history of Wales in the 20th century has also been very much the history of coal and mining for coal. Next, please. Here you have the flag of Wales with the red dragon, which of course is, you can meet them in Wales. As I mentioned, the flag of Wales is not represented in the Union Jack. And the reason for this is that the conquest of Wales, I explained a few minutes ago that the Union between England and Scotland was an agreement between the elites. The union between England and Wales was a military conquest. So they made no concessions. It wasn't necessary to make concessions. Next, please. One of the things which is most notable... about Wales is, of course, the language. And the significant thing about the language is that the number of people speaking Welsh is going up and has been going up for 10 years. And that is very important because minority language in Europe, it's not easy. And so it is one of the most stable, from a demographic point of view, languages in minority language in Europe. It's as you can see, it's not really it's not close to English at all, and it has a few interesting elements here. So, you know, good morning, body da, good night, nos da. That's not so difficult. With dwythym and deas, it has a couple of sounds which you don't get in other languages. You know, for example, this one here, the double L. Is it's very easy to do. You put your tongue, you do an L like, and then you breathe out of the side. There you go. Isn't that fun? Yes. Next, please. So a little bit of information about the language. Until the middle of the 1800s, until the middle of the 19th century then, more than 80% of people in Wales could speak Welsh. And the Welsh language did decline, mainly because of the Industrial Revolution. The Industrial Revolution meant a lot of coal, and a lot of people coming from England or Ireland to dig the coal, and they didn't speak Welsh. According to the Welsh government today, there are about 580,000 people in Wales who can speak the Welsh, can speak the language, about 21% of the population. However, one of the difficulties of Welsh is that most of the people who can speak Welsh fluently live in the same part of Wales. There's a Welsh-speaking part of Wales, and of course, if you hear people speaking Welsh, if you can speak a bit of Welsh, and you hear people speaking Welsh in every shop, that encourages you to continue. Whereas if you never hear any Welsh, you might not bother. And this is the next thing. Language use surveys carried out between 2004 and 2006 suggested that 56% of all fluent Welsh speakers lived in four counties. This is Anglesey, Gwynedd, Ceredigion and Carmarthenshire. And the census in 2001 revealed that 40.8% of Welsh children between 5 and 15 could speak Welsh. So, of course, this last statistic is very important because it's very typical for a minority language where you get to a situation where only old people speak it. And, of course, that's not good for the future of the language. So, the Welsh language is not out of danger, but it's looking pretty good. I mean, I am one of these people who think that it would be a terrible shame if a language is lost. So I'm happy about this. Next, please. I don't know the Welsh national anthem. I don't know if there is an official Welsh national anthem, but the unofficial Welsh national anthem, which for a long time was the only, for many people in Wales, is the only Welsh they know, is this children's song, which I will try to sing to you. My bis Mary and Wedi Brief, oh, David the Guastil Munyach, my Babbin and the Crud and Cree, oh, Argad, Wedi Scrapple Johnny Bach, Zospan Bach, and Very Arthan, Zospan Vaur, and Very Arthan, Agad, Wedi Scrapple Johnny Bach. Okay, now this was important. Oh, thank you. This is important. It's an important symbol. If you go to a rugby match, you will hear the Welsh people singing this. And just a couple of things about the language which I quite like. Here you have this sound again, llawr, llawr. After you, llawr. That was good. But what makes Welsh a little difficult for English and French speakers is that in Latin the end of the word changes, dominus, domine, dominum, domini. The end of the word changes if it's the subject or the object, etc. In Welsh, the beginning of the word changes. So bach and dda is the same word. And llawr and fawr, I don't think we have one here, it is the same word. Yeah, it can be rather complex. And now, in fact, I think I might have the English on the next page. Yeah, Marianne has hurt her finger and David the servant's not well. The baby in the cradle is crying and the cat has scratched little Johnny. A little saucepan is boiling on the fire and a big saucepan is boiling on the floor and the cat has scratched little Johnny. It's not important as itself. It's simply a children's song which everybody knew. And so it became an important symbol. You can make symbols out of anything. If you've been watching the news this week, in Hong Kong, there's a big movement for democracy. And what is their symbol? You have the umbrella. You never know what's going to become a symbol. Do you have a question then?
I was wondering if
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. It's just an accident. It's just an accident. Okay, next please. Yeah, I just want to... Because I don't want to... Just one moment. I'm afraid you're dead. Okay. I don't want to give you just general... Oh, sinon vous pouvez aller ailleurs aussi. Vous avez le droit. I don't want to give you a sort of general political history, just date after date, because it's not so interesting. So I want to talk to you, for every group, today the Welsh, about some of the famous people who are symbols of them. And so we have one, Robert Owen, and you can see here he was around from 1771 to 1858. And you can see this is obviously, for a historian, obviously, a 19th century statue. he's dressed up, and you see there's a poor child. He is caring for the poor child, yeah? He's a generous rich man caring for the poor child. And Robert Owen was an important socialist from the beginning of the 19th century, one of the first socialists in Britain. And he wrote books, New View of Society in 1813, and he studied the Industrial Revolution. He studied the factories, the new factories. The factories are a completely new thing. And he proposed ways of changing society. He was a founder of an enormous trade union in 1830. Now, in 1830, this is very early for a general trade union. At the end of his life, he established a village in Scotland, called New Lanark, which is a kind of model village where they had a factory, but they also had education for everybody. Certaines premières écoles maternelles du monde. And also, it was very interesting because they taught the same subjects to boys and girls. And in 1850, this was revolutionary. Is there that question? Okay, je vais essayer de ralentir, okay? Okay, yeah. Okay, so Robert Owen, one of the first socialists. And if you are in Glasgow or in Edinburgh, if you get on the train for half an hour, you can go to New Lanark, which of course is now a museum, but it was the village which was established by Robert Owen to show the world how it was possible to have a factory and education for the children, even for the tiny children, etc. Il avait aussi l'idée révolutionnaire à l'époque qu'il ne faut pas taper les enfants à l'école. Tout le monde pensait qu'il était fou en 1850, c'était impossible. Ça semblait impossible. Okay, next please. So. Oh, Lanark, L-A-N-A-R-K. Alors c'est New Lanark, N-E-W, bon, New, comme Nouveau Lanark, L-A-N-A-R-K. Yes. Another very important figure from Wales, David Lloyd George. David Lloyd George is very famous for two reasons. It's kind of complicated, but history is complicated. Firstly, for some reason, he has a very positive image for one reason and a very negative image for the other. First of all, positive. He was part of the liberal. He was one of the ministers in the liberal governments at the very beginning of the 20th century. So, for example, in 1906, he introduced the first school meals, les premières cantines scolaires. Yeah, very cheap or free for children in 1906. And again, this was at the time, this was very, very impressive. And in 1909. The first old age pensions, les premières allocations retraites en Angleterre publiques in 1909. These were not the first old age pensions in the world. Germany was first, but they were some of the very first. So Lloyd George is famous as a minister for introducing some important social reforms at the beginning of the 20th century. Yes? Les allocations retraite, 1909. Mais vous pouvez mettre au tout début du 20e, ça aussi. Okay, so that and these were. Oh, même aujourd'hui, les retraites c'est très important pour les gens. Mais quand c'était les premiers, it was very, very impressive. Yeah, because normally what happened before that is that when you were too old to work, either your children looked after you, or you were on the streets. So it was pretty heavy. Now, the more negative thing is that Lloyd George, next please. Lloyd George was the British Prime Minister in the First World War. For complicated reasons, the First World War does not have a positive image today. It's kind of interesting because the Second World War has a positive image in general. or the First World War, is considered by many people to just be a complete waste of time and money and lives. And so he's also known, and there he is on the left. What a hat. He's also known as the man who won the First World War.
In the First World War, we were allowed the British Empire to even more extent.
That's true, but exactly. Today, the British Empire is not very popular. Today, yeah, that's right, exactly correct. Of course, the First World War allowed the British Empire to get even bigger, although the First World War also allowed the United States of America to become the most powerful country in the world. So it was kind of hard, even for the elites. Next, please. We're still just looking at some important figures from Wales. Now, of course, there are 100 important figures from Wales, but I can only give you 10. This is Dylan Thomas. He's a poet. Although some of the poetry is quite difficult, some of his poetry is quite difficult, he has a very strong reputation. He was born in 1914. And he died in 1953. Interestingly enough, he always wrote in English. He's a Welsh poet, but he always wrote in English. Next, please. And here we have one of his poems. C'est adressé à son père qui est mourant. Génial, hein? Do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rage at close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Though wise men at their end know dark is right, because their words had forked no lightning, they do not go gentle into that good night. Good men, the last wave by, crying how bright their frail deeds might have danced in a green bay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. And you, my father, there on the sad height, curse, bless me now with your fierce tears, I pray. Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Alors l'idée, c'est qu'il faut toujours résister contre la mort, même quand il n'y a plus d'espoir. C'est ce qui est humain, c'est de se battre contre la mort. Next, please. Another Welsh gentleman. Aneurin Bevan.
Alors vous voyez que c'est pas, j'ai pas écrit de la même façon que sur la statue. Je suis pas sûr.
J'ai vu les deux. Alors je saurais pas dire. You may be able to see that this is quite a modern statue. This is not a traditional statue. He's got a rather unusual position. Not a traditional statue. And here it says Aneurin Bevan, 1897 to 1960. Founder of the National Health Service, fondateur du Service National de Santé. Now, the National Health Service in Britain is something that the British are extremely proud of. The reason for this is that in Britain today, if you go to the doctor, one thing you do not need your checkbook, because the doctor is free. Yeah. That is to say that the doctor is not reimbursed, ce n'est pas remboursé, it's just free. And this is something which British people are very proud of. Et pour une fois que les Anglais font des choses mieux, je tiens à le dire. And this was the idea of Aneurin Bevan, who was a Minister of Health in 1945. If you remember, or if you looked at the Olympic Games opening ceremony last year, there was a long section on the National Health Service, because it is a symbol of Britain, and it's something that people feel very proud about. And Aneurin Bevan is a popular hero for working class people in Britain. It's like en France on a 36 et 68, et en Angleterre on a Aneurin Bevan. It was very difficult to establish the National Health Service, which was free. The doctors were against the idea. And Oren Bevan had to fight with the doctors who did not want to become salaried by the state, but who wanted to make money. And in particular, they used to sell their practices. That is to say, when you were an old doctor and you had your list of patients, when you wanted to retire, you sold the business to a young doctor for a lot of money. And this is now illegal after the National Health Service. Next, please. So here is the Oren Bevan's book about the National Health Service, the story of how it was created. And here is a novel. This is a novel about the doctors before the National Health Service. A very, very amusing novel about being a doctor before the National Health Service and the corruption and dreadful things that were going on. Je crois que la c'est pas un médecin, c'est basé sur les faits réels. Par exemple, l'usine locale donnait de l'argent aux médecins pour qu'ils ne trouvent pas de maladie professionnelle à cause de la pollution. That sort of thing. It was really, something quite impressive. Next, please. There is a tradition of singing in Wales, and although some of these singers are rather traditional, perhaps for your taste, Bonnie Tyler is a very well known and powerful singer of her generation. In particularly well known for, I think it's I'm Holding Out for a Hero. And there's a great song there. Next, please. Shirley Bassey. Slightly older, she was born in 1937. And you probably know her one song of hers, which is, anybody know one song of Shirley Bassey's? Vous avez entendu parler du film de James Bond, Goldfinger? See, Shirley Bassey sings the song, okay, so she does have a... she also sang the theme song for Diamonds Are Forever, also James Bond, and Moonraker. Next, please. Much more modern, and I think you might like some of this. This is kind of, it's rock really, it's kind of folk rock. Keris Matthews, she was born in 1969, and with her group, next please. Well, there you go. The group is called Catatonia. Can you see up there, Catatonia? Quite interesting words. Some of the words are in English, and some of the words are in Welsh. So you get a mix. And famously, she has one song, and the chorus is, "Every day when I wake up, I thank my God I'm Welsh." That's a modern thing there. Next, please. Catherine Zeta-Jones, yeah, Welsh actress. And moving over to the more intellectual pursuits. Next, please. One of the greatest mathematicians and philosophers, Bertrand Russell. He died in 1970. And he was one of the great philosophers of the beginning of the 20th century, who worked with Ludwig Wittgenstein. He was also a pacifist and a political activist, and in the 1960s he was part of the campaign against nuclear weapons. And one day he was in a demonstration, he was 93, yeah? And he was in a demonstration in Trafalgar Square, and a policeman came along and arrested him and took him away to prison. And it was on the front page of every newspaper in the world. This was Bertrand Russell, you know, which was quite amusing because I'm sure that the policeman's boss was not happy. This was not the right person to arrest. Yeah, Bertrand Russell. He was arrested with, I think it was 93 or something, and so Bertrand Russell arrested. He continued being politically active until until he died, really, in 1970. And one of the last, one of his last acts was to defend Gaza, which was already having a terrible time in the 1970s. Okay, so that was like a presentation of some important things about Welsh culture, the language, extremely important, and some of the great figures. Just so let's go to the history. The Romans again had difficulty taking over Wales because of the mountains, not just because you can hide in mountains, but also because the Roman method was to occupy a country and take 20% of the food which they produced to pay for the army and so on. And if you have mountains, it's much more difficult to produce food, so it was not so good. This is why in the north of Africa the Romans did not go very far, because again the agriculture, when you get down a bit, is not rich enough to pay for an army. So after the Romans, the Saxons tried to defeat Wales and never completely managed. So in the 6th century, the 7th century, the 8th century, the English went forward and backward and forward and backward, but never completely won. But finally, in 1282, there was the final victory of Edward the First, who defeated the Welsh prince Llywelyn. Yes, oui. Okay. Llywelyn. Yeah. On va pas vous demander de l'écrire, mais bon. Vous mettez le dernier prince de Galles, c'est bon. Llywelyn. Llywelyn. So, now, yes. 1282. So now the English dominates Wales, but next slide, please. Excuse me. Ça c'est le monsieur qui va se faire arrêter incessamment sous peu. Next, please. Yeah. So look, 1282. The English dominates, and what do the English do? They build a series of castles. And here is one of them. This is Conwy Castle, built in 1283. Took 6 years to build, and this photograph is today. So it was a strong castle. Yeah, it's still there, like 800 years afterwards. And if you look at the size of the walls, enormous walls. Now, if you feel that your victory was final and you are completely confident, there is no need to build a castle like that. The English dominated Wales, but they were terrified, so they built big castles like that. Conwy Castle. Beautiful, beautiful castles. And of course, this is the good old medieval fortress with the drawbridge and the moats all the way round. Next, please. Another one, Rutland Castle, 1277, just before. And of course, if you like, you can attack this castle. Would you like to attack a castle like that? It doesn't look very easy, does it? And of course, the people at the top, they pour boiling water and sometimes boiling oil on your head. Normally boiling water is cheaper, but boiling water on your head is not a lot of fun. Rutland Castle. Next, please. Okay, so the domination of Britain. I showed you two castles. There are 10. Even today, there are 10. Now, so the English then dominate completely Wales, but the Welsh language continues. In England and in Scotland at this time, the Celtic languages decline much more, and in Wales they continue. Now, one of the traditions of Wales, which continued until today, is the Welsh male voice choir, the chorale de voix masculine, an enormous tradition in Wales, and very often every factory or every mine will have their Welsh male voice choirs. Next, please. And of course, When the Welsh, the Welsh emigrated, like everybody else, and also participated in the British Empire, but also many of them went to America, and just here you can see the Chicago Welsh Society. If you're in Chicago, you can join the Welsh Society. Right, because everywhere in the world, Welsh Society in Chicago. Next, please. And this is the Hong Kong Welsh Male Voice Choir. Yeah. This is one of the interesting things about the British Empire, is that you find all over the place, Hong Kong Welsh Male Voice Choir, why not? It's hard to say where people actually come from there. You can't really tell. Next, please. And there you have the language, then the importance of the language, much more important, as I have mentioned, than in Scotland, much more spoken. But also the signposts, so here you have humps, I can't even say it, on dit en français, ralentisseur, which is smaller in English, humps, and in Welsh, tumpathaw. There you go. And then you have a little bit more over there in the way of Welsh language. Canolfan Ddinasec Civic Centre. Next, please. Gwrych yn Offalws. Yeah. Please drive carefully. Next, please. One of the not very important facts about Wales is that it has the longest place name in Europe. And of course, tourists go to this town just to photograph the railway station. Yeah, which has got it's got a certain style to it. Now, the reason it's so long is that Welsh, like Hungarian, is an agglutinative language. So this means the village near the church, near the river, which is, you know, it's actually like a description. But in Welsh, like in some languages, you just put everything one after the other. Yeah. Did I miss a goch? Never mind. Next, please. I was mentioning that the Welsh language today is resisting quite well, but there is a long and painful history about this, because the English domination for a long time tried to eliminate the language. In the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century, in the schools, they tried to stop the children speaking Welsh. And this is one of the methods they used. This is the Welsh knot. It's a piece of wood. And what they did with it is that if the teacher hears somebody speaking Welsh, then they must wear this. And they can take it off if they report another child speaking Welsh. Yeah? And at the end of the day, the child who has it is beaten. Yeah. Now, it is pretty shocking. It is pretty shocking, yeah. And I don't know, probably some of you understand this, but being obliged to not speak your own language is extremely violent. It's really very, very violent thing to do. And so this is some of the shameful past. Now, I'm going to speak more about the language, because where in Scotland nationalism concentrated on political autonomy and then independence, in Wales nationalism is mostly cultural, and the language is at the centre of nationalism in Wales. Because at the beginning of the beginning of the 20th century, the Welsh language was declining. In 1911, 43% of the population spoke Welsh as a primary language. 43% in 1911. And Plaid Cymru, sorry, in 1925, yeah, in 1925, a new political party was established. It was called the Party of Wales. Now, remember that the name of a party is always very important. Not Welsh National Party, not Welsh Nationalist Party, just the Party of Wales. Next, please. And the Party of Wales in Welsh is Plaid Cymru. Plaid Cymru was the party which was established in 1925. And their first aim was not autonomy or independence, it was defending the Welsh language. So the language was at the centre. And here you have, from 1936, one of the pamphlets of Plaid Cymru. Pamphlets, une brochure politique, ça s'appelle pamphlet. Next, please. And so here you have a modern picture of leaders of the Party of Wales, Plaid Cymru. There they are, with their modern symbol of the dragon, but as a more modern version. Okay, now in the 1930s, we're moving through the 20th century, in the 1930s, the most important campaign of Plaid Cymru was around the radio. At this time, all the radio was controlled by the BBC in Britain. Yeah, there was no private radio, all the radio was the BBC, and there was no radio in Welsh. So the Welsh nationalists had a big campaign to have, in fact they refused to pay their licence fee, so une grande campagne de refus de payer la redevance de la BBC, de la radio à l'époque, il y en a encore la télé, parce que tout était en anglais, alors ils disaient, nous on n'a pas payé donc. So they had a big campaign, they were successful, and the first Welsh radio channel was established in 1937. In 1937, the first radio channel. After the Second World War, in the 1960s is the next big element, because the census in 1961 showed that only 26% of people spoke fluent Welsh. So you see that the number has gone right down in Wales. And so people were very worried, and they began a big campaign in 1962 to defend the Welsh language. They were somewhat successful because in 1967 there was a new law in London. Yeah, they passed a new law to defend the Welsh language. So, for example, after 1967, if you went to a tribunal in Wales, you were allowed to speak Welsh in the tribunal. They could not oblige you to speak English. So the law of 1967, the Welsh Language Act, defended the Welsh language in public circumstances. In the 1970s, there was a campaign which was rather different, because one of the terrible problems they had in Wales was that it's a beautiful country, it rains a lot, but it's a beautiful country with a lot of countryside, and many English rich people from England liked to buy holiday homes in Wales, second houses. Alors, la résidence secondaire en France, c'est une minorité qui a une résidence secondaire, mais beaucoup plus grande qu'en Angleterre. L'Angleterre, c'est tout petit, il n'y a pas la place. Alors, quelqu'un qui a une résidence secondaire en France, parfois, c'est la maison de village du grand-père qui ne vaut pas grand-chose. Mais, donc, ça ne veut pas dire qu'on est franchement riche. En Angleterre, si on a une résidence secondaire, c'est qu'on est riche.
And one of the problems that was in Wales is that in the villages,
the Welsh people could not buy houses because all the houses were being bought by English people who only came on holiday. And so the price of the houses went up very quickly. So the Welsh nationalists had a solution for this. They burned the houses. When the houses were empty, they burned them. And in the 1970s, there was a campaign of hundreds of holiday houses in Wales were burnt. So here you have something more, obviously more radical. There was also, in Wales, in the same way as in Scotland, there was a referendum in 1979. So, referendums today, I've been talking about the first referendum, 1979, a referendum in Scotland and in Wales. 1997, a referendum in Scotland and in Wales. And 2014, a referendum in Scotland on independence, not in Wales. Okay, just to summarise the independence, the referendum thing. Next, please. Here you have a campaign, a new campaign, for more respect for the Welsh language. You can see that it's a recent campaign because you see there is an internet address. And it's Ble Mair Gymraeg, where's the Welsh? En fait, ce sont des panneaux de circulation et ils les ont recouverts parce qu'ils sont seulement en anglais. Ils veulent qu'ils soient dans les deux langues. Yeah. So, where's the Welsh? Yeah. That's a campaign. Yeah. Where's the Welsh? Ble Mair Gymraeg. Next, please. The BBC Wales, because there was some success. Now, television in Welsh, now, of course, if you are a minority language, television is very important. Okay. How can you persuade your children to speak your language if there's no television in the language? You know how important television is to children. And so, in the 1980s, there was a hunger strike in Crève de la Faim by Gwynfor Evans, one of the leaders of the Welsh nationalists, and the aim of the campaign was, we want a television channel in Welsh. And this led to the establishment of BBC Cymru. And even today, if you look on the BBC, well, even more today, if you look on the BBC website, you click Radio Wales in Welsh. And so you have a lot. Of course, with the internet, it's much easier to have a lot of channels. And in the 1990s, we had a new law about the Welsh language. 1993. The Welsh I spoke a moment ago about the Welsh Language Act 1967, and this is the Welsh Language Act 1993, and the 1993 Act says Welsh must be treated equally to English. That is to say, if you receive a letter from the police or from the hospital or from the local government in English, you can phone them up and say, I want the letter in Welsh. And they must send it to you in Welsh. It's the law. You know, they're not allowed to do anything else. So this new law obliged all organisations in the public sector providing services to the public in Wales to treat Welsh and English on an equal basis. This is only the public sector. If you have a private business, like a supermarket, you are not obliged to do anything in Welsh. It's only for the public sector. For example, there are universities in Wales, in Cardiff and in Swansea. If I wanted a job teaching history in Cardiff or in Swansea, probably I could give my classes in English. But when they were recruiting, I would need to speak Welsh. Maybe not fluently, but I would need to show that I am learning Welsh, I can speak some Welsh,
Even if I am French or South African or Nigerian or Argentinian, if you want a job in the public sector in Wales, you're almost obliged to speak Welsh. So this is the legal framework which it is hoped will protect Welsh. Of course, this causes a big debate. Some people say it's not fair to oblige people to speak Welsh. And other people say it's our language, it's our home. Yeah, of course we can oblige people. So it's a big thing. And it has some success. Okay, so to move on to, next please. To move on to the political side, there were, just like in Scotland, then the two referendums, 1979 and 1997. And in the same way, this was for an autonomous parliament. Not for independence, for an autonomous parliament. However, in 1979, the Welsh said, no, we don't want an autonomous parliament. Quite decisively, no. And in 1997, the situation was rather complicated because it was half of the population stayed at home. Half of the voters stayed at home, didn't go to vote. And the yes vote got 50.1. Donc, la moitié des votants sont restés chez eux, ne sont pas allés voter. Et sur ceux qui ont voté, le oui a eu 50,1%. C'est-à-dire qu'ils avaient gagné, et ils allaient mettre en place un parlement, mais politiquement, c'est très délicat, parce que tous les opposants disaient, oui, un quart de la population est d'accord avec vous, hein, c'est impressionnant ça. So it was very delicate. That's what happened in 1997. In 1997, the yes for a parliament in Wales was successful, but by a tiny majority on a low turnout, and so politically that was difficult. However, after the parliament was established in Wales in 1997, the parliament became more popular after it was established. And a few years later, there was another referendum in Wales only, where they said, do you want the Welsh Parliament to have more power? And the voters said yes. Yeah. So, interesting situation. Do you want a Welsh Parliament? Ouais, bon, d'accord. Yeah. And then a few years later, do you want the Welsh Parliament to have more power? Yes. So, when the Welsh Parliament existed, they had they were successful in persuading the population, look, we are useful. Next, please. And here you have then the results of the 1979 referendum on the left. 58.8% of people voted. Ne notez pas tous les chiffres, c'est trop. 243,000 people said yes. 956,000 people said no. And the 1997 referendum, 50.3% of people voted, and 559,000 voted yes, and 552,000 voted no. So it's going to be a very, very low majority. Next, please. Here you have some of the slogans, Welsh, not British. Yeah, Welsh, not British. Next, please. There you have then the Welsh Assembly. Maybe France could lend Britain some architects. Yeah, that would be nice if you could organise that. That would be nice. I don't like this very much. Next, please. So the National Assembly for Wales was created by the Government of Wales Act in 1998. Contrary to the Scottish Parliament, it only possessed the power to determine how the government budget for Wales is spent, and administered. So the Welsh Assembly could not raise taxes itself. But this was changed a few years later. And a few years later, with another referendum, it was the Welsh Assembly got more powers. Même le titre, quand il l'a établi en 98, il l'a appelé l'Assemblée nationale du Pays de Galles et pas le Parlement. Parlement, c'est un mot plus fort en anglais. Next, please. Yeah. So its primary law-making powers were enhanced following a yes vote in the referendum on the 3rd of March. 201? Oh là, en plus je ne l'ai pas noté. Je crois que c'est 2011, à vérifier. Making it possible for it to legislate without having to consult the UK Parliament nor the Secretary of State for Wales in the 20 areas that are devolved, the 20 subject to health, transport, tourism, etc. Next, please. The Welsh Assembly Government, there's the symbol. Next slide, please. And there is the situation today. Notice that the Plaid Cymru, the National Party for Wales, does not have a majority. In Scotland, the Scottish National Party has a majority. In Wales, in 2011, the Labour Party is dominant. 30 seats for Labour, 14 seats for Conservatives, 11 seats for Plaid Cymru, and 5 seats for the Liberal Democrats. And here is a joint poster between the Scottish National Party and the Plaid Cymru and some of their priorities there. Next, please. The First Minister.
Notez bien qu'on dit Prime Minister pour le Premier ministre à Londres et pour les premiers ministres des parlements autonomes, First Minister. Simplement pour ne pas dire la même chose.
First Minister. So in fact there is one Prime Minister of Britain, or to be strict, one Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. There are three First Ministers. The First Minister for Scotland, the First Minister for Wales, and the First Minister for Northern Ireland. Next, please. Next, please. Oh yes, that's just an official government website in Welsh. Next, please. And that's all for today, and that's the story on Wales. Next week I'll be talking to you about Northern Ireland and Ireland. Make sure you have a look at my teaching blog sometime during the week. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.